It's state to state. We got your Nittany line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin. So kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs. Baseball, golf, soccer, plus all the top fights in MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head to the online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of over 150 slots games. Head to betonline.ag today to get in on the action. Use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. State of State is presented by BetOnline. The game starts here. State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out their Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today. All sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today. Hi, everyone, and welcome to State of State. Justin King is back, and today we are talking about Penn State football and its passing game in 2024 in lieu of some recent comments by Penn State quarterback Drew Aller in regards to his wide receivers, specifically the position that everybody has been talking about this offseason, wide receiver. Is there reason for hope and positivity going into this season? There might be. We're going to dive into that. Like, comment, subscribe, rate us, turn on notifications, and comment on YouTube and on social media at State of State Pod. We appreciate it so much. Before we get into this, I have a couple of things I want to get into, and I want to get Jay King's opinion on this. One, my apologies go out to West Virginia quarterback Garrett Green, who I accidentally last week, Justin, called Garrett Gilbert. So for some reason, my brain was at the University of Texas and I guess the Alliance of American Football Orlando Apollos. So apologies to Garrett Green. Do you remember Gilbert?
No, not off the top of my head.
Yeah. Get a quick run in the NFL. I think he's bounced around to a handful of spring leagues. But my apologies to Garrett Green. I do think the world of him, and I think he will provide some stiff competition for Penn State in the season opener in Morgantown. So I wanted to hit that off the bat. And then this is an NIL thing. Justin, I think you're going to find this interesting. So for those of you that don't know, the new EA Sports college football video game that everybody has wanted back for 10 years now is finally coming back this month. The hang-up on it was NIL, name, image, and likeness, and players not being paid to have their likeness in the game. Kind of how this whole freaking thing started, right? It was the NCAA college basketball game that really sparked it. So in order for an active college football player to have their name, image, and likeness in the game, they would have to, first of all, consent to it, and then they would be paid $600 by EA, and then you get a free copy of the game for opting in. There are a bunch of players that opted in, Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, especially for Penn State, to name a few notables, and then plenty of top flight players around the country. But there were some that didn't. One who didn't was the backup quarterback for the University of Texas, Arch Manning. Everybody knows Arch Manning, part of the legendary Manning football family. This was announced by Pete Nakos from On3 on X. And Justin, I'm very curious to hear what you think about this. EA Sports has paid Texas quarterback Arch Manning between $50,000 to $60,000 to promote College Football 25, and he will also receive $600 and a copy of the game for opting in.
That's pretty tight. I mean,
leverage.
Leverage, right? I think that's a cool way of getting him to sign on and be in the game, right? But because I don't think they need any help with the promotion of the game, but I think that's somebody to give it to if they're going to put them in more commercials and things of that nature. But it's interesting to see how they're going to divvy up the money and which college players they're going to pick to quote-unquote promote, right? Like, I wonder what Travis Hunter got to promote the game. It'll be interesting. I mean, just from that standpoint, because we see like where EA Sports is essentially setting their market value for the different players out there, right? And the NFL goes through the NFLPA, and it was like, it's kind of simple. Like, all right, top of Madden is pretty much kind of slotted. But now this whole new market of college football, it's going to be interesting. But that's going right, 60K? I mean, he hasn't even played a game yet, right?
No, I have it pre-ordered. I can't wait for it. I'm very excited about it. But like, yeah, he's the backup quarterback, first of all, which fascinating. But on top of that, it's like, yeah, you also are paying for the Mannings to be involved in the promotion. That's how it was released on social media. So it's like, it's going
Omaha, a little bit beyond. Omaha.
Omaha Productions doing some fabulous business here. So it's like, yeah, you spend 60K and maybe you get 1 million, 2 million views on this type of video because the Mannings are entertaining. And maybe you sell a few more copies on your way there.
I mean, he's playing a different game. You get a little front end, you get a little back end, you get a little, you know, general admission.
Better than everybody else, you know? Game,
that's
right?
What I'm saying. The general admission is the 600 and a free game. Get the 60K, let me promote it. And then on the back end, you know, he's probably an intern for Omaha Productions.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to Penn State football. The quote that inspired this episode comes directly from Penn State starting quarterback Drew Aller. Drew recently was on the record with Blue White Illustrated and said in regard to the wide receivers going into this year, quote, they're 10 times ahead, even from where we were in the spring. And I think it's really been the three leaders in that room, Trey, Liam, and Fleming. I think they've really taken it upon themselves to change that culture. Let's break this down a little bit. When you hear that type, first of all, that type of positivity isn't shocking from the starting quarterback and from the coaching staff. That's all we've heard. Penn State's very good about the PR aspect of this. Why in anybody's right mind from this program would you say, yeah, it's not going great, we'll see you in August, that sort of thing. So you know it's going to be positive. To say they're 10 times better, the entire wide receiver room, than they were even in the spring, just a handful of months ago, that is no small statement. What did you think about that?
First thing, just to be immature, I thought it was like shots, pop, pop, pop. Any guy, anybody that left is like, hey, anybody that was a problem is gone now. That's my initial. But I think he's trying to be positive going into the new season with the new leader and Julian Fleming. Got some new freshman receivers coming in. Some guys that are there get to step up. And obviously, he's feeling fresh. It's a little bit of offloading and getting last year behind us and acknowledging that, hey, maybe there was something wrong with this receiver's room and the receiver room and the culture here. And this year it's much better with different leadership and me being in a better place, new offensive coordinator, a lot of things that are going into that pot between the quarterback and receiver room relationship this year. So I think he's just kind of give a vote's confidence of in that aspect.
When he says that the entire position is 10 times better than it was in the spring, I mean, we came out of the spring, Justin, you and I, and just about every other media outlet being like, got to see what this is at wide receiver. And Keandre Lambert-Smith transfers to Auburn shortly after the blue-white game. I think that's who you're maybe referring to as catching a stray in this whole thing of the quote of, they've really taken it upon themselves to change that culture.
Yeah, man. If he was kind of a culture setter or somebody that set the thermometer at a space that didn't align with everybody else, maybe that's what he's talking about. And hey, you got a new guy coming in town from Ohio State, Julian Fleming. And again, it's still wait and see with the receiver room. So I mean, it's gonna. But I like the confidence. I like the confidence.
You've covered this a little bit through LIG Sports and Blue Chip Academy, especially. When you hear players talk about the culture within a specific position room, as an outsider to me, I'm like, well, you kind of expect a different culture for an entire team, maybe certain whole sides of the ball, like this is the way we play defense, this is the way we play offense, but an overall culture varies from team to team. But room to room, that is much more granular, and I imagine very difficult to manage for individual position coaches. Can you extrapolate on that in terms of the culture that happens within, for instance, the wide receiver room?
Well, I mean, you got to think that every room or position group takes over the personality of that coach, essentially, because they're the person that's acquiring that talent, but there's a threat line of a type of personality they want to deal with. Typical positions, you're looking for similar traits from those guys, right? Or whether it's offensive interior linemen. I'm looking for tough, nasty guys that are this big. So there's certain traits that come with those players. I mean, you see them at scale when you're recruiting like 700 players. So when you say the culture of a room, it's a makeup of the different personalities that that receiver coach brings in and kind of, I guess, brings to work on a daily basis as they're being developed. We've talked about the different or the inconsistencies at the, in the receiver room with the offensive coordinator. And so sometimes when that happens, you're getting different personalities with maybe some similar traits, but different personalities to where the culture in that room is kind of different because it's not necessarily the person who is coaching that room. It's not their ingredients per se. So, I mean, now that you see like Marcus Hagan's been there for a couple of years, you guys can see a couple of recruiting classes come in, a new offensive coordinator, quarterbacks in his second year, have some veteran leadership in the room. You probably see some level of culture starting to be built because, I mean, this is the some level of stability that we've had with a receivers coach in that room. So it takes a while for culture to be built. So I think that's what we're seeing in a room, and you want that across the board. You want an authentic culture in each room that portrays or magnifies that position group, because you don't want the offensive line to be the exact same as the DBs, right? Or as the quarterbacks. I mean, it's a different personality. It's a different goal in the game. So I think it's very interesting. We talk about the culture in that. And hey, you guys can check that out on a recruiting business masterclass on LIG Sports Group, because we talk about when you're evaluating schools, how important it is to align with the position group that is similar to the culture that you can see yourself developing in, because it can be completely different than the overall team culture. So it's very nuanced.
You mentioned wide receiver coach Marcus Hagans, a little over a year now officially on the job as the wide receiver coach for Penn State football. Now, you also have to remember at the same time when he took the job, Mike Yurcich was the offensive coordinator. Obviously, James Franklin calling the shots, but still having to adjust now to a new offensive coordinator. And then I don't want to pin this all entirely on Keandre Lambert-Smith as someone on the outside looking in, not knowing all the facts and specifics. But do you think Hagans inherited a situation where it was like, hey, this is what Yurcich's offense looks like. This is what they want to get out of Keandre Lambert-Smith. Make this work as best you can. And now everything has changed completely. So he kind of has free reign now to make that room his own.
Sure. I think James has a saying that he likes his position coaches to be the head coach of their room. And for that to happen, like a head coach to build a culture at a school, it takes a couple years for you to get the guys that you identify with, like from a personality matchup throughout the recruiting process. And there, because there is a part where you're going to high level universities like Penn State, and you're transitioning in or going up the coaching ladder. So you have to coach the ingredients that are there. Your part of your job is to make sure that the product on the field is productive, regardless of attitudes or personalities. But when you get to build that culture, you know what I mean? Like having a culture room or a room that has a strong culture is completely different than having a talented room. You know what I mean? Because you have the same values. Look, we're going to block to the second whistle. We're going to whatever those different traits that align with the culture. I mean, and I think as those things develop in each room, it's beneficial. Anywhere that you've seen a coach have a time to build out the room, you see it with the Long Boys, you see it with the Aces of the tight ends, you see it with Lockdown U with the corners and the safeties, and linebacker U. Like the culture within those rooms, because the coaches have been there, even from the defensive line standpoint, look at Coach Barnes. He was a GA and he was able to slide right underneath because he did a lot of the recruiting. He understands the players that were coming through. So like when you see some level of consistency on the coaching staff, that's what should be produced. So it's going to be interesting in this new wave when, as we continue to see the coaching carousel come into play.
Aller pointed out there's been three leaders in that room, Trey Wallace, Liam Clifford, and Julian Fleming. that does and does not surprise me all at the same time, because it's been a discussion throughout the offseason, Justin, of who are the leaders on this team? Who are the individual leaders amongst their position groups? Those sorts of things. I think, yes, if you were to look at this wide receiver core and the most seasoned guys coming back, and then Fleming, obviously a transfer with plenty of experience at another major school, you would jump and think, yeah, Trey and Liam being leaders, been there a while, that would make sense naturally. Julian transferring in and becoming a leader, it's something we'd heard, but that's not a given. You don't just transfer to another school and all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're a leader, people look up to you, or, you know, even to go as far as becoming a team captain at some point. That's a big deal if that happens. Not saying that's the case here, but to hear that Clifford, Wallace, and Fleming have separated themselves as leaders of that room, surprised or not surprised?
I'm not surprised. As you get closer to the season, I think maturity and experience starts to show a little bit. But again, wait and see until this season starts when productivity is on the forefront.
There's also been a lot of conversation outside of that primary three. I think big three would be a little bit too far. You know what I'm saying? That primary three wide receiver. There's been a lot of discussion about Omari Evans and Caden Saunders potentially being able to contribute more than we initially anticipated, probably after the 2023 season ended and around when spring practice came and went. I think you and I were talking on here about, like, there's a big opportunity for these guys to jump in there, just because, yes, you have Fleming, Wallace, and Clifford there, doesn't mean that there isn't room for the fourth, fifth, sixth guy to jump in there and contribute. So Evans and Saunders are getting some attention, but also two guys I know you're familiar with, Tysier Denmark, an incoming freshman, and Peter Gonzalez, have certainly got a lot of love, it sounds like, early, and very quickly have understood what their role is, but not necessarily coming in and being the freshman who's just happy to be here. It's two guys, Denmark and Gonzalez, from what I've heard, are walking in and being like, no, I want to play in 2024. What have you heard, and what do you feel about that?
I mean, that's what I think. Heard the same thing, where guys have stepped in ready to play, not really begging pardons, when you love to see that. And I think it's going to be interesting, because right now, I mean, I think coaches are just going back from vacation, so that's a lot of team activity. And this is the time where a lot of players really have to establish themselves from a respect standpoint of how you approach this game with your other teammates. So it's going to be interesting to see, because the culture should really start to mold some of the actions of the young guys coming in. So I'm excited to see how the reports come out in the preseason camp.
We've had Peter on the show here. He seemed like a really, really prepared young man altogether, and it sounds like he's done well walking in there. Denmark is the guy I think a lot of fans are really, really focusing on. Not anything against Peter by any means, but Denmark seeming to have that it factor, that ability to flash, as we always talk about. So hopefully there's that opportunity for both of those guys to see the field this coming season. And it's no disrespect to the rest of this room. There's plenty of other guys that are competing amongst the wide receivers to try and get those reps, but you kind of have an understanding of what the top five look like altogether. And then I'm still of the opinion, Justin, that Tyler Warren is the number one option in this passing game in 2024. What those numbers look like, does it shake out like that at the end of 2024? I'm not entirely certain, but if you're going to have the focus on the running game that we hear Andy Kotelnicki really wants in 2024, Drew Aller expressing more confidence in his wide receivers is outstanding, but I still feel really strongly that this passing game will benefit the most if it goes through Tyler Warren. What do you think?
I mean, Tyler Warren's a staple in the offense, and he creates mismatches every time he steps on the field. I say, and when you have that, and it's an easier throw for the quarterback and get him in rhythm for whether it's just the passing game or even setting up the running backs to be able to crease the defense, I think it's going to be extremely important for him to have an integral role in opening up the offense, especially if Andy's offense is real heavy run. You have those Tiger looks with two tight ends and the way that they're approaching. I mean, I heard good things about the Dinkins kid as well. So when you have that approach with two tight ends, two running backs, it gets real tough to defend that from a standpoint of having the right personnel on the field, whether you're having nickels that have to come up and tackle with the two tight ends that can block or cover those guys when you talk about the body the body size and mismatch from that standpoint that they create. So they have weapons. Again, let's see if they can bring it together. And that's part of the culture of building that, I think, Drew's referring to.
And it's not just Warren Dinkins, Khalil Dinkins, to your point, Andrew Rappelier, someone who got a lot of play time during the blue-white game and clearly has some developing to do in terms of understanding his place within the offense. Physically, seems to be like he can hack it at the Big Ten level, which is very exciting. And Joey Schlaffer is someone, I really like his length as a pass catcher altogether as an athlete. I think there's a lot of potential in that tight end room. And you and I have talked about, hey, if the wide receivers don't get it done, James Franklin, Andy Kotelnicki are very happy to look at the Aces and Ty Howell's group and be like, okay, we like your culture. We know what your culture is all about. Here's the opportunity to go out and prove it altogether. Before we go, I'm curious, what was the wide receiver room culture like for you as a freshman?
Oh, man, it was interesting. That's a good question. There really wasn't one established at all. I mean, they were averaging like 4 or 5 points the year before. So, like, it was coming off of a bad offensive performance. But when we got there, there was a little bit of – I mean, there was swag in the room between Derek, Jordan, Dion, and the crew. Like, everybody was there to try to make plays. So there was this, like, you know, young guns type of feel in there. But we were – I mean, what was the culture like? I mean –
because you came in a lot of fanfare, a lot of buzz. Yeah. You've said
it was competitive.
Yeah.
It was extremely competitive. It was competitive, but it was like extreme. We were young too. I know there were some days where we would get in trouble a lot for a lot of drop balls or big plays here, mess up a route here and there. So we were learning the plays a lot. So once we understood what was going on and we started making plays in the season, I think that kind of matriculated. But I think that receiver room, their culture didn't develop probably until I went to defense and those guys got real tight. And, you know, Jordan, Derek, and Dion really kind of meshed as their 1-2-3 punch.
I'm looking at
their own little culture.
I'm looking at the 05 roster right now, just as a, because that was one of my favorite years of Penn State football, obviously going to the Orange Bowl after that. But Terrell Golden as well.
Hey, yo, what up to the turn?
Redshirt sophomore at the time. Jordan Norwood was just kind of cutting his teeth. Brendan Peretta, Patrick Maudie, who I actually was neighbors with Patrick Maudie at one point in Orlando, Florida, believe it or not. One of my personal favorites to watch, Ethan Kilmer.
Wow, well, shout out to Ethan Kilmer. Yes. Ethan was a horse, man. He was strong, fast, and bro, yeah, walk on. End up playing with 5-6 years in the NFL, like as a safety.
Nice long career,
He was a walk on. Ended up starting that senior year. He's the deep threat receiver. Ethan was like a Swiss Army knife. I couldn't even consider him a receiver.
Listed at wide receiver, but I'm trying to think who I would put him in. Like kind of like. I know everybody looks at a tall white wide receiver at Penn State and they're like Joe Jaravicious, right? And it was like, well, Joe was kind of that half wide receiver, half tight end. And same thing with Brett Brackett, very similar build and similar athletic ability. Would you agree?
Brett was like an H-back, more tight end, like more tight end style, more your TJ Warren body type. Ethan was like an elite track athlete. Like he was low 4.3, probably 6'2", 215. Yeah, he was like a track horse, man. Like Ethan was a specimen for real. It's like he's a walk-on. Like I was like, oh wow.
It's interesting you mentioned walk-ons. I know we're wrapping up here, but there's been a loose discussion about walk-ons being removed from college football because of this era of NIL and potentially going to something where there is collective bargaining, official contracts, those sorts of things. Would you be in favor or against walk-ons in college football in the near future?
I mean, I think walk-ons are valuable. I think you've got a lot of talent when guys start off as walk-ons. And I mean, Deion Butler, he was a walk-on that ended up having all the records, but I think it should eliminate those dream chasers a little bit sooner to where it's like, okay, try to get somewhere where you can play and not just say like, hey, I'm gonna be a walk-on here and hopefully get an opportunity. It's like, we don't have that type of time. So like try to figure out what school, if you're going to walk on, that you have an opportunity to earn a scholarship at and not just kind of leech on and pay your way to get connections, because I think that's going to start to limit itself. Because I know from a strategic standpoint, offensive or coaching staffs, they want to upgrade their walk-ons as much as possible. They're always looking for better walk-ons that can come on for free and hopefully earn a spot. So the best teams have very talented walk-ons.
Also, that 05 team, shout out at wide receiver, Mark Rubin, Vic
Sermon, Rubin,
Kevin Cousins, and James McDonald. And the tight end also is great. This is just all my memories flashing back. Isaac Smolko and Mickey Schuler. Oh, God, that was a fun tight end room to watch. That was great. All right. We can keep going on the 05 team. We'll do like 2 hours on the 05 team at some point.
Okay. One day.
Hop in the comments section. Get at us on social media. Let us know how you feel about Penn State's passing game going into 2024, specifically the wide receivers and this confidence that Drew Aller is expressing in his pass catchers as we get closer and closer to the beginning of the season. Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, let us know what you think of the show on social media and check out all of our content on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Search for the handle at State of State Pod. State of State is presented by BetOnline and by Blue White Outfitters.